Hello and welcome to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Last week, a federal appeals court said President Trump violated the First Amendment by blocking certain critics on Twitter. Meanwhile, in Michigan, a Republican state representative called out the Democratic Attorney General for blocking him on Twitter. Here to help us understand free speech in the age of Twitter is attorney Faith Spahr. She's a University of Michigan lecturer in communication studies. Faith, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So let's recap what happened in Michigan. So we have Republican Representative Bo LaFave of Iron Mountain. He has criticized Attorney General Nessel over Line 5, over her investigation into the sexual abuse accusations against Catholic priests. And now he says, she has blocked me on Twitter. Does an elected official blocking people on this public social media account, does this violate free speech?
I'm going to give a very attorney-like answer.
Do.
It depends. If you look at the Second Circuit Court of Appeals ruling in the Knight Institute versus Trump case, one of the things that they said is it's going to be a context-by-context analysis. Whether or not the attorney general's account, if it's private and she's doing private things from that and not making public pronouncements, that might be a different analysis than what the Second Circuit Court of Appeals indicated in the Trump case. So it depends on what she's saying from that particular private account. Is she issuing public policy pronouncements from that account? And I actually don't know for sure. I haven't looked at that account to see what she's been doing from that account.
And indeed, the spokesperson for Attorney General Nessel noted the account that Nessel blocked LaFave on is her personal Twitter, and it's not the Michigan Attorney General Twitter, which she said nobody is blocked. So I guess, you know, does an elected official deserve to have a private account?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if they are talking about what they did over the weekend with their family, if they are talking about a show they saw, if they're talking about you know, things that are really personal, I think that even the Second Circuit Court of Appeals decision would indicate that they can do that. Once they start getting into more, again, policy pronouncements, more about their public duties and so forth, then I think that she's starting to, or she or whoever the public official is starting to get into the realm of what the Second Circuit Court of Appeals held, that that would be your official account, and you have some obligations under the First Amendment to followers.
So let's talk about that. I want to get a real clear understanding on what basis this appeals court ruled that the president had violated the First Amendment.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting decision because most of it's kind of insider, you know, legalese, but it's this doctrine known as public forum doctrine. And, you know, most of the cases with respect to public forum doctrine are cases where it's government-owned property. And the question is, you know, with this government-owned property, do citizens have the right to speak from that government-owned property, right? Now, the initial case was from 1939, I think it was, and it was a public space. It was like a public park. And so these were considered traditional public fora, parks, streets, sidewalks, right? Since then, the Supreme Court has gone on to kind of expand that notion to what other kinds of properties does the government own, or even what other kind of properties does the government control. And that's kind of where we're getting to with the Twitter account that the president has. Is that an account that he controls? And has he opened it up for public discussion because people can comment and the comment thread can – the commenters can comment to one another about public issues, about things the president has said.
So think of an elected official's Twitter account as the 2019 smartphone version of that public park from the 1930s.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly what – if you read the Second Circuit Court of Appeals decision, even if you read there's a case a couple years ago where the Supreme Court said that North Carolina couldn't ban sex offenders from social media accounts. They talked a lot about social media accounts being today's traditional public fora. They didn't go as far to say that they were, but they likened it to that. The thing that I find interesting as a scholar that looks at these issues is that it's quite clear that that's not publicly owned property. Twitter owns that platform.
True.
Twitter could ostensibly, if they wanted to, kick any of the users off, right? That's not akin to that public park. That public park was traditionally owned by the government, right?
could that be open to a legal challenge? Your point is, you're right, it's owned by Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. You know, most court watchers for, say, the Supreme Court would say that there has to be some sort of, or doesn't have to, but usually there has to be a split amongst the circuits for them to take a case like that. And the Second Circuit Court of Appeals has come down and said that this is public space. It's a public forum that the government official here, in this case, the president, opened up. Other circuits have said the same thing. So there's not actually a split.
Let's talk about President Trump's Twitter. He's had that account for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So as a private citizen, he can block whoever he wants. But then the act of becoming an elected official changes that, is
it
what this court's saying.
That's what the Second Circuit Court of Appeals said, is that, yes, when he, I think it was 2009, he first started tweeting on Twitter. But once he was inaugurated, once he started making public policy pronouncements, once he started telling us who the next, I think it was CIA director was going to be, once he started making policy pronouncements about transgender troops, those sorts of things, then it was a public space. Not his actual tweets, the interactive space below his tweets.
Okay. The space where people are being blocked.
Exactly.
Talking theoretically here, I'm not talking about Representative Lefebvre and Attorney General Nessel, but theoretically, you dive into Twitter for a while, and you don't have to look very hard at all for examples of very hateful, misogynistic things that are being hurled at people. We can certainly think of the tweet storm that was unleashed on Sunday by the president, very clearly aimed at four Democratic congresswomen of color, including Michigan's Rashida Tlaib, and things that can be said about people. So does the constitutional right to free speech give us the right to use someone's Twitter to abuse them, basically to make it open season?
That's a really good question. The Second Circuit Court of Appeals, when they're talking about this, it was a fairly – as far as once they decided it was a public forum, it was pretty easy for them to say that the president had violated the free speech rights, because he made it clear, and the defense made it clear, that they had blocked these users because of the viewpoint that they were engaged in, that they were criticizing the president.
It wasn't the content of the president's tweets.
But they were saying, we don't like what they were saying. Mm-hmm. We don't like that they were criticizing him. But they never said it was because of how they were criticizing him, like the manner, like if they were using, profanity, or you're hurling epithets, or, using discriminatory language. They never said that.
Okay.
So that could be a different analysis. I'm going to block this user because they continue to engage in, profanity or haranguing with epithets. So that they left aside. That they didn't address.
Because certainly when you read comments toward the president's tweets, he gets a lot of that as well. Profane, foul mouth. There is a lot of that. So it's that climate that can happen on Twitter. And it made me wonder just where that boundary line exists between criticism and outright abuse.
Right. I mean, I hate to use the old Potter Stewart I know it when I see it, he made that pronouncement about, what is obscenity. But it's kind of in the eye of the beholder. I mean, there's a famous case, the Cohen case, where the guy's wearing a jacket that said, with stronger language, I don't like the draft. And the Supreme Court said that one man's profanity is another man's lyric, right? Mm-hmm. And so that you can't excise certain words from people's vocabulary in going around and policing people's speech. That was different, though, because what the government was doing there is they were actually prosecuting that man for disturbance of the peace. Okay. They weren't saying you don't have right to this particular platform. So, for instance, let's say that you have a city hall meeting, and you can come to city hall and engage in a debate with your council members. But if you start engaging in hurling epithets at them and hurling invective at them, surely you're going to be asked to leave. And I think most people would say that would be an acceptable regulation of that particular forum. I think that's possible here, even if you say this is still a public forum, that you might have some ability to have what you call a time, place, and manner restriction when it's about the manner in which you're engaging in that speech as opposed to the viewpoint in which they're engaged in.
With this ruling from the Federal Appeals Court about the president, how do you think elected officials will be interacting with critics and with opponents on social media going forward? I guess even more broadly, how much has social media changed our understanding of what the First Amendment protects and what it does not?
Well, I think a lot of government officials are going to, if they have, you know, any attorney in their ear at all, they're going to be sitting down thinking hard and thinking twice about blocking users after the Second Circuit Court of Appeals decision. They could try to make it clear that what they're doing with this space is limited, so that they could try to narrow the impact of this decision, saying that it's not a designated public forum. It's limited to talking about these particular issues, right? And then that way they could try to make the argument that if I block you, it's because you were off topic, not because of a viewpoint that you were engaged in. You know, I've read other legal scholars that talk about the fact that they feel like once a public official uses some sort of social media platform, that they should be limited completely from blocking people. That the platform itself, such Twitter or Facebook, should say, "Look, if you're a public official, you've got to take all comers because this is you engaging in your constituency, and so you don't have the ability to do what other like private users would be able to do. You don't have those functionalities that other private users would have," which I think is an interesting idea. Eric Goldman that said that in one of his blog posts.
Which sounds like that would kind of shoot down that this was a private Twitter account in her name versus the Michigan Attorney General account.
Yeah. I mean, and what that would do is it would get the platform owner, Twitter, Facebook, it would get them more involved in kind of managing these accounts, which they're very loath to do. They don't want to be I know that they've taken more ownership lately of it, but they don't want to look like the publisher or you know, anybody that has editorial control over this content.
Fascinating stuff as we feel our way into this, into the 21st century. It's been great talking with Faith Spahr, who is a University of Michigan lecturer in communication studies, talking about media, law, policy, internet, and so much more. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.